Welcome to the Net Positive Podcast, a series of podcasts on clean energy and the environment. The Net Positive is about crafting healthy communities and a sustainable world. These explorations are designed to educate and inspire. That's when we get action. Greetings and welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. I am your host, Ted Flanagan. And this edition of the Net Positive features my great friend, Jonathan Parfrey. He is one of the most dedicated global citizens, and he's one of the most connected Angelenos.
Hey, Jonathan. Jonathan, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you see me?
I can see you.
Right on. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Well, I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about your earliest years. Born and raised where?
Born in New York City. My father was an actor. He did television in New York. Shows like The Naked City. I don't know if you're familiar with any of that stuff, Ted. But then in the early 60s, like 61, 62, moved out to LA and he dragged us kids kicking and screaming with him. So basically went from Harlem to Malibu Beach. That was the transition.
That sounds like a pretty good shift.
It was interesting, sure. Yeah.
High school in Malibu or LA? Where was that?
I lived in Malibu, but there was no Malibu High School. So we had to jump on a bus and go into Santa Monica. So it was a 26-mile bus ride. And in fact, there was a really bad B movie called Malibu High that actually happened before there was a real Malibu High. So you could say it's almost a postmodern high school that it happened after the fact.
Yeah. But Jonathan, what a commute down the coast highway there to every day to go to school.
It sounds And that's where I met my first wife and we had four beautiful kids together. So it ended up being very fruitful.
Yeah, that's great. College?
Berkeley. That was fun.
Yeah, in those days, it must have been very colorful. Telegraph Avenue in full bloom back then.
It was. I remember that the university said they were going to take back the parking lot at People's Park. And then the next thing we knew, the anarchists came out. It wasn't me. The anarchists came out and they dug up the entire parking lot. So there was no more parking lot. It was that part of People's Park. So that was their response to the university trying to provide more parking for people. It was pretty funny.
Oh, interesting. Then you started this group called OC Catholic Worker. And talk about that, because you and I have talked about it before. And I've always thought that this is where you gained your sainthood.
I don't know about that, Ted, but when I was at school at Berkeley, I was really convinced by the teachings of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. I thought that the lives that they were leading were really amazing. And I thought, what can I, you know, privileged, white, bratty kid from the west side of LA, what could I do? And there was this organization called the Catholic Worker, which is kind of the closest thing to a Gandhian ashram that there is in the United States. And it was started by a woman, Dorothy Day, back in the 1930s to do the works of mercy, to tend to the poor. And it was very exciting for me. And a lot of those activists were very involved in great social justice and peace causes, which were very close to my heart. So in 1980, I signed up with the Catholic Worker community in Boyle Heights in East LA, and then was there for 6 years and then relocated and started a community in Santa Ana in Orange County and did that for 6 years. So my misspent youth was 12 years providing shelter and food to the homeless and doing a few other more radical things at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's really, really, really admirable. And then Physicians for Social Responsibility. That was a big chapter.
Yes. So I was there for 13 years. In the offices were in Santa Monica. And that was when the organization was transitioning from exclusively focusing on national security and nuclear war questions to environmental issues. And I felt that I was responsible for a lot of the transitional work that took place at that time, including, you know, focusing in on military toxicants, where a lot of the groundwater basins in Los Angeles are Superfund sites. People don't know this. So virtually the entire San Gabriel Valley is a Superfund site, thanks to the leaching of various chemicals into the aquifers, including this material called perchlorate that affects developmental growth, affects thyroid hormone. And then in the eastern San Fernando Valley, that's entirely a Superfund site. And that also was due to a lot of the materials used in military development. A lot of that stuff was degreasers. And so you had TCE, trichloroethylenes, to take grease off of metals that were bent. So, and then focused a lot on the Santa Susana Field Lab at the western end of the San Fernando Valley, and served on the EPA work group to clean up that site. It's still in the process of being fought over decades later, but really interesting work. And that kind of made the connection. It's like when you make weapons of war, they're not only bad for the people you drop it on, it's not good for you because it's polluting your water and your environment. And that's something that we wanted to bring home to the people of Los Angeles.
And you did.
A little bit. Yeah, we tried.
How did you get on the commission? You became a commissioner at LADWP. How did that transpire?
It was under Antonio Villaraigosa. At the time, I was the director of the coalition of all the green groups in LA. It was called Green LA. And met with Antonio and I said, you know, Mr. Mayor, I just want to get it out there. In my youth, I did a lot of civil disobedience. I lived at the Catholic Worker, this anarchist commune. I've been with PSR and fighting the military. And he goes, stop with your credentials. I love all that stuff. You're on. So it didn't scare him at all, which I thought it might have, but it didn't.
Yeah. And then what would you say was your, I want to ask you two questions about LADWP, but what was the biggest challenge?
I have to be candid with you, Ted. You've heard this from me before. I love that utility. They have problems. There's no doubt about it, and lots of them. But at heart, that's the people's utility. That belongs to the people of Los Angeles. And so I actually I'm bullish on LADWP. I think they get a lot of stuff done. They don't get credit for a lot of stuff done. And they've had an enormous sea change of people who were very resistant to moving into renewables, very resistant to do the engineering needed to balance the grid in this new and unique way. I think they're making huge headway in that regard. One of the things that I felt really good about being on the commission was helping steer the course to get off of coal-fired electricity. I played a very large role in affecting that decision and moving that policy forward. And then there's so much that was attached to that. So, you know, if you get off of coal, you got to replace it with something. So that helped a lot of the solar development in the region. So that was my chess move. Let's get off of coal because there are so many knock-on benefits from that essential policy. And then I really liked the work I was doing on water, especially in the Eastern Sierra. It is very fraught. It's a tough situation, but I actually wanted to do that as well. I wanted to face some of those demons and seeing if we couldn't do a better job. And I think we, on Owens Lake, we were responsible for affecting some really great new policies up there that I think have left the region in a much better place. And I learn about, like in the Salton Sea, the very things that the department perfected on Owens Lake are now going to be used to make the Salton Sea less emissive and have fewer problems. So very proud of that. And internally at the department, I was given the punishment of being the chair of the personnel committee, which is something that is handed out with some, you know, disdain. Oh yeah, you idiot, you go do the personnel committee. And I decided to take that on. We had at the time something like 80 some grievances that were to be seen before the commission. And by the time I left, zero. We did all the grievances and dealt with the workers at the utility in a respectful way. And I'm also really proud of that. And to this day, I don't know if there are any grievances left. I just don't know. But we went from 80 to zero.
That is a fantastic story. I didn't realize that. And that speaks to your character, Mr. Parfrey. That speaks to your character. Or should I say commissioner? And I'll echo
it. It was 5 years. A fun 5 years. And yeah. I also did a bunch of tours, Ted. And I took, whenever I did a tour, I said, I'm going to bring some environmentalists along. So I brought a crew of different people. Some of them became commissioners later on in their careers to sort of show them the way the utility worked, because we have to operate by facts, you know, and the best way to learn stuff is by experiencing it. So I was also very proud of that.
Yeah, very, very good stuff. Very good stuff. It was LADWP that brought me out here in 1998. And I think it was right about then that the utility was really changing course. But by the time you became a commissioner, you really amped it up. And now it's truly an exemplary utility. I just had Angelina Galitova on the podcast a couple weeks ago. She's the chair of the ISO, but she, of course, was at LADWP when I was there. We were reminiscing a little bit.
I think it's wonderful. Like, whoever thought that we'd be talking about, you know, storing hydrogen in Utah and then, you know, using that as a means of, you know, providing electricity for the city? And then you have the new Boulder National Renewable Energy Lab report on getting LA 100% off of fossil fuel by 2035 and showing a pathway to get there. I mean, you and I, thinking back, we did not, that's a different utility than we knew.
This is a dream come true. This is a dream come true.
Yeah.
But we're living it. Thanks to a lot of hard work by a lot of people, including yourself. Let's talk about Climate Resolve. Did you really form it in 2010?
Yeah.
Has it been that many years? It's over a decade old.
Yes. Wow. Yes. Yes, my double chin accounts for is attributable to Climate Resolve.
Talk about what you envisioned. You founded this organization, and as I understand it, it's very much focused on local adaptation, local means of addressing climate change, but flesh that out a little bit.
Well, here's the theory of change, as they like to say in the nonprofit world. Like, how do you think you're going to make a difference? What's your theory of change? And so here's ours. We think that climate change is the great existential issue facing humanity. I mean, there are others. I mean, we have to learn how to treat each other more kindly and deal with racial and ethnic and economic issues. That I don't want to diminish any of that, but if it's too hot to fucking have a civilization, you're not going to be dealing with those issues, you know? And so the upshot is that I wanted to really address that existential threat of climate change. And I felt that you need to help people see themselves in the climate picture to be theoretically in favor of something that's a wonderful thing, doesn't get anything done because people think a wonderful thing is optional. Well, I'd like to do that. If I have enough money, I'll do the wonderful thing. But yeah, I don't have enough money, so I'll pass on the wonderful thing for now. What I've been wanting to do is move climate action from being a virtuous thing to being an essential thing, to being a life and death thing. And the way to get us there, our theory of change, is to put people in the picture. So it's a virtue to help save polar bears, but it is a necessity to save your children and yourself from heat stroke. And what we did from the very beginning was taking the climate science that is peer-reviewed, vetted, it's what we're doing our planning off of, and embedding that in people's understanding. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you got to give people some hope that if you don't have any hope, why invest any of your activism in the first place if you don't think it's going to be successful? So that was the other piece, is to give people something really tangible that they can succeed at. And so that's sort of climate resolves theory. It's my crude way of putting it, it's the tuchus theory. You got to put people's tuchus in the picture, and that'll help you succeed.
Well put. Now, maybe I really mischaracterized them when I emphasized adaptation.
Well, we feel that if you talk about heat, you got to do a solution. And so Climate Resolve has been supporting solutions. So that could be increasing the tree canopy in Los Angeles. That can be cool roofs that reflect solar radiation and put it back into space, or cool streets where the streets also reflect sunlight and keep neighborhoods cool by just taking advantage of physics. Good old fashioned physics can help us. And Art Rosenfeld, blessed be his name, was one of the first people to say, why don't we take advantage of physics and put it on our side to help us keep our cities cool and to reduce energy demand. And that's something that we've been a big champion of. So right now I'm on the Cool Roof Rating Council group. I'm on their committee to help promulgate this new concept of cool walls. I'm on the Atlantic Council's international group on urban cooling. I'm on the governor's technical advisory council on climate change adaptation. And we're enthusiasts for trying to come up with ways of cooling down our cities so that people can tangibly see, oh my God, they did something. We're cooling down. It's getting better. And we think that could be a gateway drug to other climate action that gives people a sense of hope that if we act now, as just as we cleaned up our air in Los Angeles to a great extent, by acting, we can also act on climate change, and we can have a better result than ending life on Earth.
That's fantastic, fantastic. And are you optimistic? I mean, it seems to me that the numbers, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but in terms of decarbonizing, maybe the state of California is sort of halfway there. I've seen these various reports that we're sort of halfway there to achieving our goals. And the nation is maybe halfway there in terms of the power sector. But is that right? I mean, are we significantly on this path to a sustainable level of CO2 and greenhouse gases in the atmosphere?
Are we on a path to herd immunity in the United States from COVID? Kinda, yeah. I mean, among the educated citizenry, we have a lot of people who are vaccinated, but there are a lot of parts of the United States that aren't. And similarly, there are parts of the United States, the same places, by the way, are moving ahead on climate action, and there are other parts of the country that aren't. And so I think, you know, again, moving away from virtue to necessity, I think is the key. So the way to get South Carolina excited about this is either showing the tuchus theory that if they don't do something, they're in big trouble. That's one. But the second thing that California has going for it is that our economy is doing okay, and we're reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And so we're showing that economic growth and climate action go hand in glove rather than are competitive. And I think that that is a wonderful model. In fact, if California is able to trade with Europe, with the advanced industrial countries in Asia and in Latin America, and people like working with California because we're playing by the same games on climate action and greenhouse gas reduction, but they don't want to play with the rest of the United States because they don't know how to do that stuff. I think that that is a huge leverage for the non-compliant states to get involved. So, okay, so you've heard my Tookus theory. The other theory is FOMO, fear of missing out. And I think FOMO could potentially also help us with the more intransient areas of the country.
Agreed, agreed. Hey, let's talk about Coolest in LA. This is your annual gala where you salute those local climate leaders, I guess.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this year there's going to be a hybrid event. It's going to be in person at La Crête and also online. Talk about
that. Well, even at La Crête, we're going to be outdoors. We're setting up a big canopy in the back parking lot so people can mill around, but we're going to be outdoors. We're following all the, you know, public health department protocols, but we like the idea of trying to do a little bit of, you know, seeing each other and getting back to social connection in person rather than just through the interweb.
So. Yeah, I hear you. We've gotten really good at using the internet and Zooming and Google chatting and meeting and every other darn thing. But boy, it's going to be nice to get together and be able to see each other and look each other in the eye and have a drink, all that kind of good stuff.
Yes. So the date is June 24th and it's coolestinla.org.
And talk about it. Who's going to be, who's the feature? Who's featured?
Well, we're honoring Wade Crowfoot, who's the Secretary of the Resources Agency in California. And Wade, I don't know if you remember seeing this, when President Trump was in the state capitol and they were having a meeting about wildfires. And Trump is going, well, no one knows where these wildfires come from. And Wade is at the table. He goes, Mr. President, respectfully, yeah, we do know. The scientists are telling us it's coming from climate change. And so it's like, I love the guy. I've known him for years. And so we decided we'd give him an award. I think for that 30 seconds of
he deserves it.
Speaking truth to power, he deserves it. So then we're also honoring Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia. I don't know if you know this, they came out with a wonderful climate action and adaptation plan. Our organization worked on that. We think it's really, a really beautiful plan. And I think for LA County's second largest city, it's exciting. The third person is Nicole Whiteman, who is the director of the LA Dodgers Foundation. And she's amazing. We're working on a project with her in the city of Compton. They are reviving a park there, Gonzales Park, by building a new baseball stadium for the community called Jackie Robinson Stadium and a smaller stadium for the other for Raquel Robinson. And then the last person we're honoring is Marty Adams of LADWP because they're making such great strides.
Sure, they sure, that sounds good. That sounds good, it's on June 24th. And then just wrapping things up, we started the call, you sort of said how many hours you were working. And when I hear about all that you're doing, I can see why it would take all those hours. You've got so many tentacles out there and so many responsibilities that you're covering. So I thank you for that. But on the personal side, you're a grandfather now. You have, is it two grandchildren?
Four, Ted, four.
See, time flies when you're in a pandemic.
I know.
four grandchildren. And then the most amazing thing you told me recently is that you're boxing these days.
Oh my God. Well, that's, you're getting into the thing I love. So yeah, I even have a mat set up in my apartment wrapped around a beam, a post, and a trainer. And we walk through the various steps, and there is under no circumstance ever would I think of ever landing a blow on another human being. That is the furthest thing from my mind. But man, it feels great to just practice what it takes. The art of being a boxer is just so amazing. So I'm just really impressed with the discipline and the work it takes to do that kind of exercise. Just so impressive. And I got a great trainer.
It sounds fantastic. I've been on a few of your bike rides and your big hikes, and we've had some great outdoor activities. I can't imagine the boxing, but you know, here's just another side of Jonathan Parfrey coming to the surface. So, hey, listen, let's wrap there. Thanks so much for being part of the Net Positive.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks for all you do.
That's it. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Net Positive. We'll see you next time.